Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you so much for being here with us and coming back for another hour. We said we're going to talk about anxiety this hour, and we are. It seems to be almost an epidemic of anxiety that we're involved in. And what can we do about this? Is it a spiritual problem, a social problem, a psychiatric problem? If you have questions about anxiety, about facing anxiety, about overcoming anxiety, this hour is for you. The number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. Kevin Majors. Dr. Majors is a psychiatrist. He's currently on the faculty of Harvard Medical School, where he teaches a weekly class on cognitive behavioral therapy to psychiatrists in training at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. More important than that, he's a graduate of the University of Dallas. More proof of the fine work that they're doing at the University of Dallas. And he's here to help you and us as we consider this, what I said before was an epidemic of, I don't know if that's a very scientific way of thinking about it, but it does seem to be kind of a flood of anxiety. Your call's welcome. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Dr. Kevin Majors, thank you very much for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be on.
So maybe we could start with just that the question that I started with. I mean, is it kind of a flood, or is it more anxiety now than there used to be, or is it just that we're attending to it more? Where are we?
I think it's both things. I think that right now, if you look in the last year, probably one in five Americans have an actual diagnosis of an anxiety disorder. So Whoa. The most common being, generalized anxiety disorder, which is worrying too much. But panic disorder is very common as well. And then there's a host of others. So it's become very common. Now the lifetime prevalence is almost one in three. Ooh. It's like one in three Americans at some point, and it's only getting more common. And I don't think that it's simply that we're catching more of it, although that's also part of it. It's true that there is less stigma to talk about anxiety. So people are more open about it. But a lot of this comes from epidemiological surveys, which we've been doing for years, decades. And so, in fact, it's picking up an actual increase in these things.
Now, this is kind of your expertise. The mode or method that you embrace in dealing with anxiety is cognitive behavioral therapy. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I would even take a step back and say, my approach is really safety learning. So safety learning means that if you approach something that is triggering your anxiety while the alarm is sounding, your system will naturally learn that this thing is safe. You won't feel that better necessarily right in that moment. But the next time you do that thing, you'll have less anxiety, and the next time less, and the next time less. That's called habituation. So if you're afraid of public speaking and you go and speak for a large audience, the first time will be harder, but then you do it again, ideally within a week. You do it again, and then it's a little bit less. Do it again, it's a little bit less. And before you know it, you start to really enjoy the process. So safety learning is what underlies what is called cognitive behavioral therapy. So cognitive behavioral therapy is a way of doing safety learning by doing what was called exposure therapy. And this started, goes way back, treating snake phobia, for instance. One of the giants in the field, Albert Bandura, got his start helping people with snake phobia. And so, he's actually not CBT, but it's close. So we learned how to treat phobias really well. And then we learned how to treat panic disorder. And then we learned how to treat worrying and then OCD, where people are obsessing. And gradually over the decades, by 2005, we now had the gold standard for treating every single anxiety disorder was exposure therapy.
So that's how you're treating everything with that, because that's been kind of conclusively found to be the method that will work.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, that's why we have all these different diagnoses. We have the diagnoses only to help with research so that we can put people in the different buckets. But gradually, there was a revolution where we started to see that, in fact, what we're talking about here are different kinds of triggers people have. But the alarm that gets triggered, which is what you feel when you're having anxiety, that alarm really is the same for every anxiety disorder. And so gradually we got this idea that really there's only one anxiety disorder, and that's seeing anxiety as a disorder. So, because it's the alarm itself that was seen as something bad.
Okay.
And it's not. And so what we were doing with exposure therapy was just proving that, yes, if you approach something that is triggering your alarm while it's sounding, it will do learning, safety learning. And that is the way of growing in confidence and overcoming anxiety.
Well, now I've heard you talk about this in relation to the cross, and this now we're so here we're taking a journey from what is medical language to religious language or the language of our spiritual lives. But what does embracing the cross, which I know is a phrase that you've used, have to do with dealing with anxiety?
It's the fastest way of doing safety learning.
Oh,
so. If you see that the cross is actually the discomfort of the alarm itself, and you can welcome and embrace that, the more positively you do that, the more more eagerly you do that, the faster the safety learning.
Ah, so in a way, this is almost a medical view on the one who embraces his life loses it. If you think of embracing your life as avoiding the things that stress you out, that you'll be more alive if you lose your life and face the things that are stressing you out.
Yeah, and you could say also it's the cause that makes the martyr. So the more you can actually try to suffer for the love of God, the discomfort that's present, the more positive it will be, the more eagerly you can embrace it. But that's, in a way, jumping to what's in psychology, one of the harder skills to master. And that's the skill of reframing, where you can take something that you were a challenge, that you were viewing as a threat, and now widen the context to see it as an opportunity for some deeper kind of growth for learning and practice. So faith is actually what gives us the widest context.
Listening to you say that, for some reason, I don't know why, this is just what happened. Recently, I've spoken to several Catholic people who had quite profoundly disabled children in one way or another. And they said how much they dreaded that when they first got the news, how horrible and heartbreaking it was. And then they, to a person, say, this has been the source of life in my life. This is where for example, abortion, people are avoiding children who have any kind of difficulty. When you're talking about that, just saying, you know, the more enthusiastically you embrace the cross, the more it will heal. That put me in the mind of this experience that you hear again and again from the parents of disabled children.
Absolutely. Now, reframing a disability in a child and facing a life with that is quite the challenge. So, and just as reframing anxiety itself, there are medical ways of reframing that make it a little bit easier as well. You can understand what your body's doing, which is kind of trusting why we're designed this way. And so there's a genius in our design. Anxiety is not a glitch, it's a feature. So there's something there that we can learn to utilize. But to say that those kind of big reframes, it would be a lot to just tell people the theory and expect them to be able to do that. And I don't do that.
Yeah, okay.
Because they would experience it as invalidating or dismissive. So I think that we can get better and better at practicing this art of reframing. If you can just look at something in the next hour that you're dreading, or that you know will be a definite challenge, and then ask yourself, how could this thing in my next ordinary hour of work, how could that be for me an opportunity for a new kind of growth, a new kind of love that I can practice there? What's the ideal? What could love call for in that challenge in this next hour? In psychology, it's better that people build up practice bit by bit. You start by reframing smaller crosses, smaller things. You can get to the point, though, where you think of the challenge in the next hour of work and seeing that this actually, that challenge is the cross waiting to be embraced. It's perhaps small, you know, but it's real. And as you try to like really stretch yourself in that hour of work to grow in some real way, to bring some ideals into this, thinking what would be the way I could do this that would be the most generous, the most caring, the most loving, the most encouraging for others or whatever it may be. I think we're able to see that, in fact, that's how ideals become a reality, through this kind of sacrifice that's willingly embraced. So in fact, it's what allows us then to bring ideals concretely into our life so that they improve how we work. I think that work is actually central to learning to practice reframing. And the more people do that, the better they get at reframing the challenge in the hour ahead. The more they will be able to reframe big things as well.
So when you say work, you mean our job, but if we're a parent, then the work of parenting. If we're a radio host, then the work of radio hosting. The things that are, I hate that part of this job. Those are actually an opportunity?
Yes. So that is where we'd be tempted to complain or dread.
Yeah.
That means we have an automatic negative frame.
Right.
All of cognitive therapy comes down to taking that automatic negative frame and deliberately widening it. And that is where the light of faith shines. Faith allows us to see things in a wider context. What is so amazing about the faith is that it applies to the tedium of the next hour of work as equally as it applies to a panic attack or even disability, even suffering and death. The faith equally allows us to reframe any level of challenge.
The number is 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. Kevin Majors. This is the work that he does. If you have questions about anxiety, overcoming anxiety, about the role of both the medical side of things and the faith side of things in addressing anxiety, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I will get to calls when we come back from the break. Dr. Majors, before we go to the break, I want to just ask you, there could be kind of a utilitarian way to think of this, that with the faith is worthwhile because it can, you know, give me a different frame. But it doesn't seem that that's what you're saying. It seems rather that the faith is true. And if we look at things through that frame, we will naturally learn better ways of dealing. We'll come to love maybe even the things that we hate.
Yeah, it's true that the faith is useful for everything. So yes. I think that there's a truth in that.
Right.
But it doesn't make us utilitarian. And just as you can say that love is what gives actuality to every other virtue, is what moves and produces every other virtue in us. The light of faith is the one light by which we see every ideal. We see meaning in every challenge. So the faith is capable of shining a light on any challenge, from the smallest, most kind of daily challenge to the greatest challenges in life.
So that's what my grandmother was doing when something would happen as a child, and she would say, you can offer it up, for the good of somebody, you know, for this person or that person. She's saying, well, this thing that you hate, naturally, in supernatural light, is actually an opportunity for you.
Yeah. And so what I think is having faith makes it easier for us to trust that the outcomes will be taken care of by God. And what we have responsibility for is crafting our own actions, what we actually do. So there's a lot to be said about how do you actually apply this in life? Because it does require all the virtues. It requires a detachment from outcomes. It requires a trust in the very body that we have been given by God, so that it's working in the right way, learning to trust your body. So there's a lot that goes into it. So I wouldn't want to say that faith is an easy solution to anxiety, but faith does shine light on how these struggles can have more meaning and like and can give us the confidence to move forward.
We're talking again with Dr. Kevin Majors, psychiatrist and Catholic and graduate of the University of Dallas, and applying the most up-to-date, latest things that we know about healing anxiety, but also relating those to the ancient things, the things that we have been given in the revelation of the person of Jesus Christ. If you have questions about anxiety, come on, I know you do. We get this all the time, and now you got the guy here that can really answer the questions. Go ahead and call 888-318-7884. There are a couple lines open, so you can get in right now, 888-318-7884.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
EWTN Religious Catalog has great summer reading for kids. Blessed Carlo Acutis, The Amazing Discovery of a Teenager in Heaven, is a chapter book that tells about the church's first millennial on the path to sainthood and the process of canonization that will get him there. It's one of many great summer reading suggestions for kids from EWTN Religious Catalog. For more, visit EWTNRC.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. We have a new guest. A guest we have not welcomed before, but we are delighted to welcome him, Dr. Kevin Majors, coming to us from Massachusetts, from Cambridge, Massachusetts. He teaches in a course in the Harvard Medical School on the very topic that we are talking about, and is able to come at this topic from both the faith and the medical perspective. If you have questions about anxiety, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, the plague of anxiety all around us. And if you are caught up in that, or there's someone else that that you would like some help helping or knowing what to say to, you're very welcome to call. 888-318-7884. We'll start in Canton, Massachusetts. Okay, it's going to be an all-Massachusetts show this hour. Ellen is in Canton watching on YouTube. Ellen, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Majors.
Hi, Cy. Hi, Dr. Majors. Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering what the doctor's opinion is on with anxiety and delving into people's childhoods and what may have been lacking, or anything that may have resulted in anxiety. Or, Doctor, do you mostly focus on cognitive behavioral therapy? Do you think it's a waste of time to go into childhood stuff, that type of thing?
Great question. The goal of going into the childhood experiences is to help people be more understanding with their present reactions. So sometimes when we have reactions, we can be internally harsh and judgmental about those reactions. Like, why do I keep thinking this? Or why am I like this? Or why? There can be a lot of criticizing of self. So I think that one of the best uses of talking about the past is just for people to see that it's understandable that this is hard for them. And so it might be that they didn't get the support that they needed, or there's just modeling going on of how do we handle challenge, and most of the model was avoidance. So I think that when we have that tendency to judge, that itself is an expression of being unwilling to let the anxiety simply be there. So if there's an obstacle to willingness, then it could serve a purpose. I mean, there might be other reasons, like if you're concerned about not wanting to pass on certain behaviors or patterns, you know, to the next generation. I'm not saying there's no reason you couldn't fruitfully do it, but in the way I practice, it'd mostly be looking at helping people to be more willing to experience the feelings of anxiety when they come. Sometimes too, where like how the anxiety actually shows up can differ based on childhood experiences. I encourage people to try to experience what they can of the anxiety in the front of their chest. Anxiety is like a tension superimposed right in the front of the chest. And if you can feel how as you inhale, it gets slightly increased And then as you exhale, it relaxes slightly. That is enough of openness that you will process the signal in a healthy way. So you just want to learn to get better at feeling the signal of anxiety. So if there's something blocking that, a willingness, then yes, we try to be more compassionate with it. But you can also just learn to practice willingness in small doses.
Does that help you, Ellen?
Absolutely. That is a brilliant answer, and it helps me a lot. So you're saying that they can both be used in combination sometimes. That might be helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there are different schools of thought on like how you try combining them, but I would try to keep it simple. If there is something that allows you, like even a memory, can allow you to access an emotion that could be used as the basis for practice. And then once you feel the emotion, you just practice feeling it as fully as you can. Mm-hmm. You try to get better mm-hmm. at feeling it.
Okay, Ellen?
That's fabulous. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you so much, Doctor. Thanks a lot, Cy.
Oh, thank you, Ellen. It's nice to hear your accent. I mean, I'm glad to have your call and the question, but it's awful nice to hear English being spoken the way it's supposed to be spoken. So thanks, Ellen. The number here, just one line open right now, 888-318-7884. Erica is in Salem, and I'm not exactly sure. There's Salem in quite a few different places, so I don't know where you're calling from, Erica, but you're welcome here. Erica?
Hello?
Hi, yeah, go ahead with your question for Dr. Majors.
As a mom, I have 5 kids, and so just managing stuff of day-to-day life in the home or trying to get kids to do what they're supposed to do and all of that, I get extremely overwhelmed sometimes. Is that overwhelm anxiety?
Not necessarily. Being overwhelmed is usually when we have the sense that everything has to be done at the same time. So I call that the illusion of simultaneity. So you think that and what often happens is best for that is learning to space out what needs to be done. If you do something, try to get your whole attention into how you do it so that that small task, whatever it is, it's like a reservoir, a vessel holding your attention, and then try to pass it cleanly to the next and cleanly to the next. If you get interrupted, it's perfectly fine. Then just put all your attention into the interruption and then go back. So there can be a way of working methodically with a kind of inner peace, you know, that you can cultivate. And often that's enough to slightly slow down so you don't feel like you have to do everything all at once.
What do you think, Erica?
Well, I can certainly see how that might work if you can master it.
I think you hit that one
exactly.
on the head.
Yeah. And so I think the other thing is that when you have young children, it probably isn't that you're constantly in threat mode, but you are constantly overworked. So to the extent also that there's moments that you can have for rest or that there can be any kind of help to give you some time off to decompress. Because I think that that's the toughest thing about being a young mother is that it's just the level of work that you have to do and the level of constant demands being put on you. So if you can at least interiorly try to stay cheerful and patient, that would be at least an enormous gain. And you'll probably feel less overwhelmed.
Erica, thank you so much for the call. I want to send you a book. I know it might be 18 years before you get a chance to read it, so I'm not trying to give you something else to do, but it's called Secrets from Heaven, The Parables and Sayings of Jesus Christ, an absolutely beautiful book from our friend, Father Sebastian Walsh. If you'd like it, all you got to do is give us an address real quick. We'll send it off. We'll get it to you. Just hang on. Erica, thank you very much. Our guest is Dr. Kevin Majors. Our phone lines are full, so we will have lots of questions when we come back. One thing I have not mentioned is Dr. Majors is the founder of Optimal Work, where it's a digital coaching platform that helps you work on how to flourish in a work situation. You already told us about how our response to work is a great deal of the journey, I suppose, of the job of letting go of anxiety. So we'll talk about that a little bit when we come back. We have to do a very quick break. There's no choice because the music's going to start playing and I have to go. And while I'm sending you off to that break, I'll invite you again to come to our conference. I just mentioned that book. Well, we decided that book was so good. We have a conference on the same theme, the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ. And that, the priest who wrote that book I just gave away, Father Sebastian Walsh, will be one of the speakers, as will Dr. Scott Hahn, Kimberly Hahn, Jimmy Aiken, Tim Staples, lots of others. Find out all about it at CatholicAnswersConference.com. It's coming up in September. Many people have forgotten just how revolutionary the Bible creation stories are. But the first three chapters of Genesis are a powerful challenge to anyone in any generation who would undervalue human lives. In the Beginning, the new book by Monica Migliorino-Miller will take you on a fantastic journey through the first chapters of Genesis, unfolding the richness of life as God sees it. Get In the Beginning today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
When it comes to Catholic teachings about Mary, there's one question we hear more than any other. Where is that in the Bible? The answer? Everywhere. In Bible Mary, the Mother of Jesus and the Word of God, Father John Weiss opens Scripture to reveal a Mary who has been hiding in plain sight. Order your copy of Bible Mary today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This year, the Catholic Answers Conference turns to the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ. Join special guests Scott and Kimberly Hahn, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and an all-star lineup of speakers September 26th through 29th. Spend time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and our special guests right here in beautiful San Diego. Seats are still available, but going fast. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 and register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll celebrate the Feast of St. James the Greater and get you all the latest news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This is where I don't really want to go back to doing the radio show because at the breaks, I'm getting free therapy from Dr. Majors, but what the heck? I guess we got to go back to doing the show. But I'll just have to keep my problems. I do want you to talk a little bit about Optimal Work, if you could. You're the founder of Optimal Work. What's that about?
Yeah, so Optimal Work grew out of my practice, helping people to work at their best. There is a natural connection between mastering anxiety and mastering your attention. And the same things that you do in exposure therapy, if you do them before an hour of work, you can go right into flow when you sit down to work. So with Sharif Yunus, my co-founder, I started this online platform to teach people these skills of reframing, becoming more mindful and recollected, and then setting challenges for yourself, to practice those in the setting of their next hour of work so that they can experience flow. I think that Optimal Work is now like an exciting way of teaching all the skills of cognitive behavioral therapy, but not taking people out of their ordinary life, even just to go to a therapist appointment. Your work itself can be the training that gives you these skills. And we just released a masterclass called Overcoming Anxiety, which is a deep dive into everything about anxiety to take people through the whole journey.
I wonder, and so now how can people participate in this?
Well, yeah, they go to optimalwork.com. And you need to set up an account, but there's a 7-day free trial, and you can do the Overcoming Anxiety course in those 7 days if you really wanted to. So we also have tools like you know, tools on how to do the goal, like how to do a golden hour, how to set up projects. And so we teach people how to work. There's a tool called the Reframer, which is helping people reframe any challenge that they face. And yeah, so there's a lot of things there that put things in the right context.
Yeah.
And essentially, there are, in fact, two different high adrenaline states that we can have. One of them is called anxiety, and its peak is panic. But the alternate is flow. So flow is the other high adrenaline state.
Oh.
And the key skill that people really need is welcoming adrenaline itself. So that when you welcome the adrenaline itself, that's actually the essence of anxiety. It's simply adrenaline. Anxiety is adrenaline in a negative frame. Anxiety is like a car with its engine revving while in neutral. Adrenaline is the gas. So yes, you're burning through it by revving it when you're in neutral, but the best thing is to put the car in drive. That's why work is so essential. If you can have some positive vision for how you most want to use the adrenaline to do your best in this task, and then come up with some practical steps, you can actually convert the anxiety into flow.
Wow, is that why? Now I am going to talk about something personal. But I mean, we do a lot of public speaking around here. Like, we have a lot of public speakers, mm-hmm. and we talk about the experience of public speaking. And often, you're better it actually works better if you were nervous just before you went up there. If you're feeling like, oh, I just don't know about this one, you'll do a way better job. Yes. I've never quite understood why that was.
Yeah. So adrenaline can go two different pathways in our body. One is peripherally, where it goes to our heart and muscles. And that's what people experience as an anxiety if they're not using it to run. Anxiety is also the fight or flight response. So if adrenaline is if you have a negative view of a challenge, you're dreading it, you're anxious, then your muscles are all primed by that peripheral adrenaline to be fighting or fleeing. But the moment there's like a switch you can flip in your mind, and this is what reframing does. Reframing will actually flip the switch where now that challenge we're viewing as a threat, you can flip it and view it as an opportunity for some kind of learning, growth, practice. So once you have that positive vision, it flips your ventral medial prefrontal cortex, which sits at the very top of your entire nervous system and allows the adrenaline to shift, where now its effect is going to be primarily in your brain, and it's going to boost your IQ. So whatever cognitive skill we can, or ability or capacity we can measure, adrenaline increases it.
Oh.
It makes you better at doing every kind of work. Adrenaline is the perfect performance enhancer. This is why I say we have to trust our bodies. Our bodies were designed by a genius we'll never comprehend. And so when we face a challenge, we get adrenaline available. But if we can have a positive view of the challenge and how we want to stretch ourselves in it, then, in fact, the adrenaline boosts our cognitive abilities. And that's what puts you into flow. But if you don't have that positive view, if you're trying to avoid the challenge, then adrenaline will boost your fight or flight, and particularly your flight. So then now you're going to feel it in the body.
Yeah, I don't have a fight. I just have a flight. I didn't get the fight part. I'm really heavy on flight.
Anger is more the fight part, and anxiety is more the flight part.
All right, back to the phones we go. Our guest is Dr. Kevin Majors, and it's wonderful to be able to talk about these things with, I suppose, a holistic or comprehensive way, where faith is not dismissed and science and medicine is not dismissed. I'll give out the number. We'll try to get you on if you call now, 888-318-7884. Quinn's in Washington, D.C., listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Welcome, Quinn. Please go ahead with your question for Dr. Majors.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Majors. As a middle school teacher, I have a group of students every year who experience quite a bit of anxiety. I wanted to know if you have any tips for me as a teacher of preteens. I realize you might not have any tips because it needs to be more specific in terms of what they have anxiety of, but we have a lot of students who just are anxious about school.
Mm.
Any tips for us?
Yeah, so it's hard to give the most like exact advice from a teacher's perspective. I'll tell you though that the literature on self-efficacy is completely relevant here. So self-efficacy is a kind of confidence we have about the task at hand. And so when it comes to anxiety about particular subjects, teachers actually can be the best models for how to be engaging challenges. Teachers can show that you can work through difficulties in solving whatever the problems are in that discipline. So that even the confidence the teacher has in presenting the material will in some way impact the confidence of the students, the self-efficacy the students have for doing that material. So I think the best gift teachers can give, in fact, is high expectations that we believe people can grow, that just because something is daunting right now doesn't mean it's going to stay daunting. If we can stay engaged, we will get to a solution. So I don't know what you teach, but I can say in general, teachers are always modeling an approach to challenge. And so the more you have that sense of an adventurous spirit and that they can do it and that they have to persevere and that high expectations are a gift to them, not a burden, I think that's the best I think that a teacher can do. There's more that parents can do and stuff when they're with kids. But I think that's at least for teachers, there's really clear data on that.
Quinn, thank you. On I go because we have almost full lines here. Mary is in Ohio. Mary, I'm very glad you called. Go ahead, please, with your question for Dr. Majors.
Thank you both. I suffer with high anxiety, which is what shows itself most right now, depression and obsessive compulsiveness. Right now, because of circumstances in my life, I have a whole lineup of ulcers, and I pick at my skin so bad that I have scars from the excessive picking that I do. And I'm looking for a way to mitigate those activities.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary, I'm sorry that it's been so hard. I'm limited in the kind of advice that I can give. The thing that you're experiencing sounds like you've been in threat mode for a while. And so it sounds like your system has been giving you very high cortisol levels for a while. So I can speak generally to what helps people with high cortisol. In the first place, I think that attention needs to be paid to diet. So, and to trying to see about, insofar as it's possible for you, you know, to make sure you're having like, that you're not making any matters worse. Now we talk about these like anti-inflammatory diets. So you can look that up. There's also something called broad spectrum micronutrients, which can help a great deal, I think, with some of the things you're mentioning. So I can't go into great detail on here, but there are, you can look up those terms. We're starting to learn now that many of these things, when people have very severe prolonged anxiety, and it's also infecting the GI tract, there can be a vicious cycle there, where as the GI tract's health worsens, they're not getting the nutrients from the foods that they need. So I would say, you know, making sure you're protecting diet and that you're getting the like things like magnesium and B12, but look up something called a broad spectrum micronutrient. Another thing that is the two other general things that can get people who are stuck in threat mode out is some kind of movement. It could be walking. It would need to be like a lot of walking, or it could be jogging or a bike or doing some physical movement. And then gradually, I don't know anything about your physical status to be able to do this. So you'd have to like talk to your doctor before you do any new exercise plan. But physical exercise can work wonders in telling our body that now when we're done exercising, it's like, aha, now we're safe. And it can turn off this kind of threat response that's been stuck on. So those would be, I would say, diet and exercise are actually two fundamental places to start.
Mary, that brings us to the break. I hope that was helpful to you. Thank you so much for the call. Wow, every line full. And we've got one more segment with Dr. Majors, Dr. Kevin Majors, who teaches at the Harvard Medical School Psychiatry. but also has developed the podcast and website Optimal Work. You can find it at optimalwork.com, and is helping all kinds of folks overcome this plague of anxiety that we've got. And not averse to sharing how faith is an important part of that growing to overcome and to even embrace all these energies that are often manifest as anxiety. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more questions for Dr. Majors right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
He was a doctor of the church, a Carmelite, and one of the most famous mystics of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. John of the Cross wanted to help all Christians to become saints. One of his most important teachings was to encourage us all to learn how to love. For there is no love, he said. Put love, and you will find love. He died in 1591.
To find out more about the Doctors of the Church, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. What a great Wednesday afternoon we've gotten to have here. Scott Wieman talking about addiction and recovery, first hour. A new guest, Dr. Kevin Majors, here with us this hour to talk about anxiety from the perspective both of medicine and faith. And we've got lots of folks on the line, so I will move forward. But I do want to, you mentioned to me during the break that that there is a connection between you mentioned to our previous caller about the connection between nutrition and anxiety. You said there's a book that you might recommend to people. Would you do that?
Yeah, there is a great book by Bonnie Kaplan called The Better Brain.
Okay.
So people want to see the research, because there are, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, check it out, The Better Brain.
By Bonnie Kaplan.
All right, yeah. Very good. We'll go to Nebraska now. Kyle is in Nebraska listening on 102.7 FM. Welcome, Kyle. Go ahead with your question.
Sorry if I sound weird. I'm a bit sick right now. But so, how do you deal with the anxieties of knowing that, like, you're always gonna sin, and like, it's so available to sin, like, in every way, and it's just your natural order, like, to return to it.
Okay, Kyle. Dr. Majors.
So I couldn't hear so well, but it sounded like he was saying that if you know you could sin.
No, he's saying the anxiety that comes from knowing that you'll always return to sin, like that you can't ever overcome it.
Oh, I don't believe that. Yeah, I believe that people can, in fact, can overcome things. And so that's what the gift of fear is for. There's a way in which fear itself is a gift of the Holy Spirit. And with the gift of fear, it's the one fear of being separated from our loving God that casts out every other fear, so that we become more and more afraid of only one thing, so which is separation from God, which is why it's the same as charity, and it goes with charity. So I think that there is a sense that, so I would be concerned, you know, something that we talked about on the breaks is scrupulosity, which is a real affliction where people have, in some sense, like a pathological fear of sin, and particularly a fear of guilt. And scrupulosity can be an expression, at least in some cases, of obsessive compulsive disorder. And so I think that a lot of things that we talk about, it applies perfectly in scrupulosity. I'd have to know more. I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, but I don't...
And it's a little bit hard to hear, Kyle, but Kyle, I'll come back to you. Did you want to have a follow-up question?
Yeah. So, like, with, like, the, like, when you, like, fear sin, like, and you don't want to sin, well, like, for me personally, like, why do I always, like, feel like I'm going to return to it? I mean, because, like, I've tried to get over, like, the fear and, like, leave it up to God and, like, trust Him in His plan, but I always find myself, mm-hmm. like, challenging myself and, like, basically, like, staying in sin, really.
Okay. Okay, mm-hmm. Kyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that in the end, perfect love is what casts out fear. And that our relationship with God needs to be about the bond with Him. And maybe another way of looking at this is sometimes what happens with morality is it turns into a more left brain set of rules that we apply. And then sin itself can feel like, ooh, then we, now it's like a technical, you know, foul or something that like we broke a rule. And those are the things that people sometimes feel like they keep breaking these rules. But I think that the real bond with God is a friendship with Him. So love of God, charity is actually love plus a life lived together. It's love and friendship. And so that can't, I mean, I think that that has to be more and more like the positive goal that we're stretching ourselves toward. If someone, what's the essence of addiction is addictions really can be thought of in this sense as a phobia of cravings. And it's not people that have addictions are technically afraid of sin or giving in. Really, they're afraid of the unsatisfied craving lasting. And that is what is most aversive to them. So if addictions are a phobia of cravings, you know, then the craving is the cure. Not that you seek it out, because that would give a mixed signal. But if it happens that there is a craving, that too can then be welcomed fully. And so I actually have some videos. If you go to YouTube, I have a Purity as Possible channel on YouTube that has particularly looking at the question of purity and growing in purity and going through understanding cravings, understanding how willingness breaks the cycle of addiction, and then going even deeper into some of the things that drive like shame that drives it. That's it. Those are rich topics. But if you go to my Purity as Possible page on YouTube, you'll see some videos there.
Kyle, thank you very much. On we go. Still have full lines. Jose is in Washington. Jose, thank you for waiting patiently. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Majors.
Yes, good afternoon, both of you. Can you hear me?
Not very well, yep. Jose. Can you talk right into the phone?
Give me a second.
Are you still there with us, Jose?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Oh, it's getting better. You're getting closer. Are you in the same room with the phone now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just driving.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'm speaking.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so I used to be an alcoholic, and I stopped 4.5 years ago, and I had anxiety before that. So while I was drinking, I used to drink to not feel anxiety, because I would feel like mm-hmm. panic attacks constantly, like couldn't breathe, you know, et cetera, the shakiness. And now mm-hmm. that I'm sober, I still get them. Like, I can't, especially after I eat sometimes. And it could be anything. It could be fruit, too greasy foods. And while I'm driving, like, I just get them randomly, and they're, like, so scary. It feels like, you know, like, my heart, like, I'm going to faint, like, I'm going to die at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Like, I've been going to the doctors as well, and, like, I ended up in the hospital a couple times, and, like, they check my blood work, my EKGs, they've done tests, and everything comes out normal and fine, and I'm healthy, yeah. but yet I don't feel good. Like,
okay.
Just,
yeah. Good. Thank you, Jose, for the question. There is a connection between the onset of panic and excessive alcohol use. And this gets into this very funny thing about what alcohol does inside of us. Alcohol enhances the activity of something called a GABA receptor. But when it gets broken down, its breakdown product called acetaldehyde does exactly the opposite thing on the same receptor. So it's a kind of anti-GABA effect. So that's why alcohol initially makes anxiety better, because when you facilitate GABA, you end up feeling calmer. But then once you break down the alcohol into acetaldehyde, then you feel worse and you are much more likely to panic. So that's a very common setting for developing panic disorder. Panic disorder, if you treat it well, and this is what CBT does, can be treated in as few as one session. So, and the goal, what you try to do, and I'm not doing it here, but what you try to do with the person is bring on the panic attack and bring it on and bring it on until finally they can't bring it on at all. And sometimes that's enough to break it. So panic is a glitch in your alarm system where now your threat detector, the amygdala, has identified an element of its own alarm as a threat. So it starts triggering itself. It's like it sees, like, so if it's like, say, the heart rate increasing, then anything that makes your heart rate increase, then your amygdala says, uh-oh, and then it gives you a big bunch of adrenaline, and that makes your heart rate go higher, and your amygdala sees it going higher, it says, uh-oh, and it gives you more adrenaline, your heart rate goes higher, so you have what's called a positive feedback loop, and that's what causes a panic attack. So in my Overcoming Anxiety Masterclass in Optimal Work, I go into, I think, a lot of detail about panic and how we help people through it. But I see panic as something is very workable. But it means, essentially, anytime you can welcome the alarm and the symptoms that you dread the most, see, the welcoming them is the key so that you can start to do safety learning for those very things.
Maybe could he check out the podcast to get started on learning about this?
Yeah, exactly. I have a podcast called The Optimal Work Podcast. And on YouTube, there's an Optimal Work channel as well. And there you'll see playlists. Now, I think 99% of our listeners are do it through Spotify and iTunes, but you can actually find playlists on YouTube, and those can help as well.
Jose, thank you. On we go, because we still have a full phone bank. Elena is in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on 740 AM. Elena, go ahead with your question.
Hello. So I'm calling because I struggle with anxiety a lot, and a lot of the times I don't realize that I'm getting anxious about things until it piles up and piles up to the point where I just throw myself into a pit of anxiety and despair. So my question is, how do you deal with anxiety when you don't realize that you're anxious?
Yeah, my answer would be hour by hour. So if you can be looking really squarely at the challenges you're facing and try to not put them off at all. One of the ways that we create stress is by putting off dealing with challenges. So sometimes when we don't recognize, I don't know if this is happening with you, Elena, but if we're not dealing like head on with things, then they increase in our mind. And the more we don't squarely deal with them or we avoid them, the more they increase. Sometimes it's hard for us to identify, in fact, when we're feeling anxiety. Probably that's because anxiety can look like any other symptom. But what's common to it is there's an urge to avoid the challenge, and you'll always see signs of avoidance somewhere. If you can step by step overcome the avoidance of challenge, you will step by step overcome the anxiety.
Elena, thank you so much for the call. That will have to do it for the calls. We don't have time to take more calls. Our guest has been Dr. Kevin Majors. And could you just run through again where people can find your work? I know that there are many people who would like someone to tell them the real medical truth, but not neglect the faith in healing from anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have optimalwork.com. is where I have the masterclass on anxiety. It's like 28 lessons going through everything about safety learning and threat learning and willingness and reframing and so on. So I think that would be the first place to look. And then the podcast as well, the Optimal Work podcast.
All right, check it out, optimalwork.com. Thank you very much, those who called. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to everybody, but I imagine we could have done 3 or 4 more hours and we still wouldn't have gotten to everybody. It's wonderful. Thank you, first of all, for accepting our invitation to come on, Dr. Majors. It was wonderful to get to talk with you.
It was great to be with you. Yeah, great. Thanks for having me.
And that'll do it for us. Tomorrow, what are we doing tomorrow? 2 hours of Ask Me Anything? I'm going to guess Jimmy Akin. Is it Jimmy Akin? Did I guess correctly? Oh, man, I am good at this. All right, we'll see you then. God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.